This is Phil Farron. I am driving over to my daughter's because, well, it's Thursday and it's been a good week. And I'm actually, I think, going to spend the weekend writing. So I thought for a while there I was going to have to come in tomorrow for a little bit to get some things finished up. But I got it all finished up. I pounded all the way through it, got it all finished up. And so I think I'm going to have tomorrow to where I can just write, which is cool. I like that a lot. Everything's going well with the projects. We're getting ready to do some more demos, and a project that I had to set aside for a while because we were waiting for hardware. We've got that under control. The hardware is up. The hardware is deployed. We're good. So now we got to start figuring out exactly what goes on in the deploy, because there's always a thousand little suggestions as to what we should do and how we could tweak it and all that kind of stuff, and eventually have to sit down with the client and say, okay, we've got to put out a phase one. Where are we going to draw the line? What's above the line? What's below the line? We'll come back to it later. So that's going to happen early next week, and then I've got a lot of little tweaking to do, and then the actual deployment is probably going to take me a solid week. But all the hardware's up. It's supposed to be good hardware, good installation. So this should be good. And the other project I've been working on, I'm actually up to phase two now, and phase one hasn't been deployed. Long story about that, but you know, sometimes these things happen. But I think I'm closing phase two. So that's good as well. So that's all going on that good front. I am not driving home. I'm actually driving over to my daughter's house because we're going to practice our improv a little bit tonight. Our class was canceled last week, but we had a good... we had a good class this week on Monday. It was fun. Still learning. This is a very interesting challenge. But, you know, it's good to stretch yourself a little bit sometimes. And so, it's good. We did entrances and exit scenes this time, where a person set the stage with space work, where they're pretending they're doing something, kind of pantomiming, and then the next person comes in and gets the opening line. So first person kind of gets to set a little bit of the platform, and then the second person can come in with an opening line and can literally do whatever they want with it. Like, we did a situation where... a guy I was working with was doing something, and he was, I think he thought he was like putting cheese on stuff, but his hand was going back and forth. So I came in and assumed that he was cutting up dead bodies. So I led with that. So, you know, that could be some fun. And then we also did a thing where it was a three-line scene, and so a person would be standing there, another person would walk up and open with something about the other person, and then that person had to respond with something about you, and then you had to respond with something about them. The idea being that you keep building the emotional core and that you establish the platform and then, you know, keep it going. So, since we have those and we're not doing conflict scenes anymore, we don't actually need a third body to help us practice, and my son-in-law has classes. He's finishing up on his master's degree, which big congratulations are in order, and he has a class tonight. However, that does mean that I can go over and practice some improv with my daughter, so I'm going to go do that. Anyways, last week, faux pas on my part. I completely lost track of what I was doing. Sorry. It was a busy week. And I was working and working, and I had gotten to Wednesday, and I thought, okay, I got to find something for the podcast. I'd completely forgotten that I actually started on a new book the week before. Oh, The End of Illness. And I barely touched that, and I'm just going to finish that up today because it's a great book. You should get the book. You should read it. It's very cool. It's good. It's good. A lot of information in the book. But then I had forgotten I did that, and so we took a little detour last week. So we're going to finish that up this week. End of Illness, Dr. David Agus, I think is his name, or Agus, I don't know, Agus, we'll say it is. And he had some pretty interesting stuff in there, some things that I had kind of heard before, but he had a lot of statistics and a lot of studies. Excuse me. I apologize for yawning as much as I do on these. This is at the end of the work week, and usually I have just been pushing and pushing all week. So I'm kind of, when I'm doing these, everything's just kind of relaxing. And I'm consuming a lot of oxygen as the air I'm talking and talking. So maybe that's part of it, too. I'm trying to yawn to get more oxygen. Anyways, I had heard about some of this before, but there was a lot of good information packed all together in this in terms of things that can cause illness or exacerbate difficulties that we're already having. And one of them is sitting. It's interesting because up to this point that I started hearing about this, I was always under the opinion that people were saying, as long as you get an hour exercise a day, it's good. You're good. Just go get your hour of exercise a day and you're good. So, or half hour of exercise, or get your 20 minutes of aerobic in, blah, 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 blah. And that's what I had always heard. And so that's kind of what I had always been working on. Just go get some exercise every day and you'll be good. Not that some exercise doesn't help. It does help. And it's certainly better than not getting any exercise. One of the opening things that was interesting in the book is he was tracing the beginning of the idea that you actually had to exercise. Because up until the 20th century, people were mostly on their feet when they worked. They were mostly moving around. And as a general rule, people who were working were getting plenty of moderate activity through the day. And a guy did a big study. His name was Morris. And he actually started studying the correlation between heart attacks and types of work. And what he uncovered was really revolutionary for his day. And he did have a very interesting quote from Morris in the book. And the quote was this: "We in the West are the first generation in history in which the mass of the population has to deliberately exercise to be healthy. How can society's collective adaptations match?" In other words, we have for centuries and centuries just gotten our exercise through the work that we do, and now we have come to the place where we don't do that much exercising. We are sedentary in our work. And now we're actually going to have to change how we approach things. And that's very true. He actually published this study that he had done where it was in the mid-1900s, I think 1953-ish, sometime in there, where he studied this. He published this study that he had done where he had a chart, and the chart's in the book. It's a fascinating chart. where it has two columns, one on the left side, one on the right. The ones on the left side are the more sedentary jobs. The one on the right is the more active jobs. And then the scale up and down the left side is a scale of mortality rates and heart attack rates, those types of things. And it's very clear that the people who have desk jobs, as opposed to the people who are working outdoors or working in a manufacturing plant, you know, those types of activities, very clear that they have a higher mortality rate and a higher incident of heart attacks. What's interesting is that for whatever reason, it's actually worse when it comes to women. He was saying, in the study, women who reported more than 6 hours a day of sitting outside of work were 37% more likely to die during the time period studied than those who sat fewer than 3 hours a day. Men who sat more than 6 hours a day, also outside of work, were only 18% more likely to die than those who sat fewer than 3 hours a day. So there is a statistical correlation. And they said they adjusted all the other factors like race and income and all that kind of stuff. And this statistical correlation maintained itself. That there is something about just sitting. And this was even, you know, outside of work, just sitting for long stretches of time. And this has sort of been the mode of operandus that's been propagated to us by our entertainment medium. That you really just need to go home, eat in front of the TV, and sit and watch TV all night. Because that's what the industrial entertainment military complex would like you to do. And don't zip the commercials, just watch them and buy what they tell you to buy. And as it turns out, that is terrible for you. All you're doing is just sitting for 6 hours that you increase your risk of dying. And in the book, Dr. Agus said that he believes the reason for this is that just as exercise improves a lot of the bodily systems and those types of things, non-exercise, prolonged non-exercise, causes the body to manufacture hormones that it shouldn't be manufacturing. And I remember reading or seeing some article several months ago where they were measuring the amount of activity, muscle activity, and they were measuring metabolism. And they were saying after sitting for so long, your body metabolism basically goes to zero. You aren't burning anything. It's like you're almost not alive. Which is not good. That is not good at all. So, what comes out of that then is that I'm thinking about all these hours that I am just sitting at my client as I'm working. And in the past, I've tried to sort of lean back in my chair to take the pressure off my back. I am blessed. I don't have a lot of back trouble. But I'm trying to kind of keep it that way, stretch and do those sorts of things. And one solution for this, of course, is a sit-stand desk, which I have at home, where you can, my desk at home, I can hit a couple of buttons and the desk will actually raise up so that I can stand in front of it. So I've done that at home, and I do stand occasionally, not as much as I should. So I've been looking around for solutions. I did find one solution. It's like $400. But it was a dual monitor with a keyboard tray, with a mouse tray solution where you could actually latch this right onto your desk and you could slide the whole thing up to stand and work, and then when you didn't want to stand anymore, you could just grab it and slide the whole thing down. That looked pretty cool. So I'm just kind of waiting for a couple of weeks to get broke into my new area, and then, you know, we'll see. I may invest in something like that, just because the more I read about just sitting, it's not good. It's really not good. The other thing that was interesting in the book The End of Illness, with regards to things I thought I knew about, was sleep. Now, sleep seems pretty straightforward. Everyone says get 8 hours a night. Ta-da! Get 8 hours of sleep a night. Or 7 or 9, whatever you're tuned for. And in the book, he was saying that in their studies, or somebody's studies, that somebody, is of the opinion now that it's not so much how much sleep you get as it is the regularity of your sleep. Because he says that the body is a wonderful machine when it comes to homeostasis. It means it likes to have things in balance, and it likes to have a routine so that it knows when it's supposed to be manufacturing hormones to do different jobs, when it's supposed to be amping you up in the morning, when it's supposed to be calming you down. It likes to have a routine. And if you're sloshing your sleep around, the body can't get that routine. And he doesn't like that. So what he was actually suggesting is it's not only getting 8 hours of sleep or 7 hours of sleep, but that you go to bed at the same time every night. So if you go to bed and get up at 10 and get up at 6, or go to bed at 10 and get up at 5:30, that you do that consistently 7 days a week. That the body likes consistency enough that he's actually recommending that if for some reason you do have to be up later one night, that you don't try to sleep in the morning. Which is pretty counterintuitive. Because although, even though it's a little counterintuitive, I have to admit that it kind of works like I work, because, you know, if I get to bed late, I don't know about you all, what happens the next day? You pop awake at the time you normally pop awake. And what Dr. Agus was saying is you should just get up. Don't try to recover your sleep. Just get up and get back on schedule the next night. So that was kind of interesting. And he had a lot of suggestions for how to make that happen. And it's all basically just kind of common sense things. You know, he was saying, don't nap during the day unless you're going to nap all the time. If you're a person who always takes a nap, like in the Philippines, a siesta, they have the siesta. And siesta time is from noon to 2. At least when I was there, from noon to 2, the city would shut down because it was siesta. And it was the hot part of the day, and so what they would do is everyone would just go home, take a nap, or they'd take a rest, and then they'd come back in, and then they would, you know, they'd work till 6 or so in the evening, and it was pretty nice. It was kind of cool. But if you don't do that, if you don't have this very consistent structure to your napping, then he says don't nap. Don't confuse your body. And he has other things like saying, okay, it's also good if you, the half hour before you get ready to go to bed, that you sort of cool down, that you don't watch a lot of TV, you don't play a lot of video games, you don't have a lot of electronic gadgets beeping and booping at you, that you just kind of take that last half hour before you go to sleep and just let yourself kind of drift down to where your body can know, okay, it's getting to be time. We're actually going to go to sleep now, and everything's going to be great. So that was very interesting. He did have a recommendation as to when to take diet or sleep pills, but I didn't write it down. So if you're interested, you can read the book. He's also, of course, he doesn't think you should do caffeine after about 2 p.m. and alcoholic beverages. I think he was saying that you should be cautious about that. Because if you have a glass or two of wine, it's going to change how you sleep, and you don't want to be changing up your sleep. And so, very interesting. But the upshot of it, obviously, is be very intentional and regular about your sleep. And the last thing that was kind of interesting that he talked about was the role of inflammation. And he talked about the role of inflammation through a good portion of the book, that we are discovering more and more that the root cause of many, many diseases, heart attacks, cancer, stroke, all those types of things, is really inflammation. And you want to do your best to cut down on the amount of inflammation that you are experiencing in life. So what that means is, for instance, do your best to avoid colds and flus. Something that he said that I thought, wow, really? There are apparently some studies that have been done that show that if you have a 2-week bout with the flu, and it's really tearing you up for those 2 weeks, and you have this inflammation war going on in your body for those 2 weeks, that inflammation changes your percentage and the probability that you will develop a major illness. He was saying in one interview that I was watching that having a major bout with the flu can, in fact, cause you to have problems 10 years later. 10 years later. And they've been able to trace back, because the body's response to the inflammation, all the things that it's having to manufacture to fight it, that things just kind of get squeegeed internally. So what can we do about that? Colds and flus. Well, first of all, there are colds and flus going around at work at this point. We've got people staying home, you know. I had to go over to an outlying office of my major client today, and it was quiet over there. People out sick. I mean, it's quiet. So the first best thing that you do about all that is you wash your hands a lot, and you don't touch your face, you don't touch your nose or your eyes or anything like that. Keep your hands away from your mouth, because that's a huge help to not catch influenza. He also recommends that you get a flu shot every year. He said because keeping yourself from getting a bout of the flu actually in the long run is a really, really good idea. He also recommends baby aspirin, that you take a baby aspirin every day to cut down on the inflammation. And I consume quite a bit of olive oil, mainly because it's an anti-inflammatory. It's a really good fat, and it's an anti-inflammatory. And when I haven't had olive oil for a couple of days running, I can actually feel it. Even if I'm not paying attention, there's been times we've been on vacation and I haven't had olive oil for a couple of days, and I thought, what? Something's not quite right. And then I realize, I haven't had olive oil. So I've been a big proponent of olive oil for years and years, not only because it's a good fat, but because it's an anti-inflammatory. The other thing that he suggests that I'm not real hip on, because I don't like drugs, he suggests anybody over the age of 40 should be taking a statin, you know, like Lipitor or something like that, which is normally given for high cholesterol. But he's saying that the studies have been done that show it's an anti-inflammatory and a pretty good one. And that there are actually statistical studies that show a fairly dramatic decrease in certain types of cancers by taking Lipitor. And he thinks it's all tied back into the drop in the inflammation level that the statin causes. Now, I'm not so big on taking manufactured drugs. I don't like that. But his, you know, his thing is, if that's acceptable to you, fine. If it's not acceptable to you, don't get sick. Just don't get sick. Don't get the flu. Don't get a cold. You know, and so I'm trying to do that. I was around some sick people today, and I'm actually trying not to touch my face, trying not to touch my nose. You know, I'm trying to make sure that I don't. I was touching someone's keyboard who had been sick, and I went and washed my hands, and trying to be very intentional and conscientious about that. The other thing that's just sort of interesting that doesn't, not really something that affects me, but I thought I would pass it along. He is not a big proponent of high heels on women, because he says that when women wear high heels, it throws their body out of whack. It throws the balance of the body, physical balance of the body, out of whack, and he feels like it actually causes a low-grade inflammation in the body. And that if you're constantly wearing high heels, that inflammation is not good for you, and in fact will be detrimental to you over the long haul. And so he's really big on, you know, no high heels, get yourself comfortable shoes, wear comfortable shoes during the day, and make sure your feet are comfortable. Because if you don't make sure your feet are comfortable, eventually you're going to cause yourself a problem, and you will think it's completely related to something else when may have just been because you were wearing high heels all those years. Which, of course, can't tell that to anybody who's shooting television. I was amused the other day. I was watching a show called Body of Proof, which has a medical examiner, and her chief of staff were there, and they were talking, and they were dressed up in their natty business suits, and they both had these huge stiletto heels on, that the only way they could support them was to put the 1-inch, 1.5-inch platform on the rest of the shoe. I was like, yeah, okay, sure. That's what medical examiners wear. So anyways, that's the news from Like Woebegone, The End of Illness. It's a very interesting book. It's long. It has a lot of data in it, but it's very, very interesting. Have a great day. I'm not actually to my daughter's yet. I was going to stop and get a little snack of nuts so I could get the glucose level up in my brain so that I'll be good on my improv practice. Have a great weekend. This is Phil Ferrand, and I am not home yet.